second hour of the Bible study. I'm Chuck Razzard. 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. Come on in with your thoughts and comments here, whatever it is you want to talk about in terms of religion, faith, church, or the Bible. We say good morning and welcome to Pastor Nathan Metter, pastor at Zion Lutheran Church in Staunton. Good morning, sir.
Hi, Chuck. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad at all.
You got a football game to do Friday?
Yeah, we are going to be in Carlinville Friday night.
Do you have your prayer cloth on there so that you can get this rain out of here before, so you don't have to work
on it? I'm supposed to do a freshman game this afternoon, too. So.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm getting my hip waders out, I think.
I think you'll have to be cleaning your shoes after you're done.
That's what the old pair's for.
So what's going on at Zion Staunton these days? Anything coming up that you want to talk about?
Well, we're making our turn into our fall program. Our rally day is this weekend, and we're kicking off the fall Sunday school emphasis, and new fall Bible studies, and we're turning our attention, continuing our ongoing 2008 emphasis on getting more of our people daily and regularly into the Word of God, and it's an intentional thing that with the help of our day school staff and the vicar and some of our small groups, we're really hitting that hard and realizing that, you know, that is where the people are fed and nourished and strengthened and encouraged on a daily basis.
I want to take you to a story that is out today in the Post-Dispatch. The headline is Anti-Porn Group Challenges Library, and it is written by Amanda Pelleschi. The story says, in the quiet stacks of the St. Louis County libraries, two sides of a classic culture war are duking it out. A local group wants the libraries to make it more difficult for teens to have access to some books they think are unsuitable for reading without parental consent. The libraries say that to comply with the group's requests would constitute censorship and maintain that they already have a process in place to review materials. The local group, organized into a loose coalition by a local chapter of Citizens Against Pornography, began questioning books found in all county library branches in August after Ellisville parent Laura Costiel approached some of the anti-pornography group's members. Costiel had visited the Daniel Boone branch several times with her 12-year-old daughter and found material that she thought was, quote, shocking. Costiel said she hadn't seen books aimed at teens with erotic passages at the county's Daniel Boone Library before a visit last year. The books in question range from nonfiction titles such as The Little Black Book for Girls, A Book on Healthy Sexuality, and Growing Up Gay in America, to contemporary series like the Gossip Girl books and a series of books with a protagonist named Alice by Phyllis Naylor. Alice on Her Way is one of them. Of the Alice series, Costiel said these books start out as being geared for second graders. By the time she's in middle school, there is stuff that just isn't for the eyes of an 11-year-old. You look at the cover, and there's this little blonde-haired girl with braces smiling. It's just too sexually explicit. The group objects to passages in the books that range from suggested sexual activity to detailed descriptions of sex acts. Many are fiction. Some are nonfiction guides. Carl Hendrickson, chairman of the local Citizens Against Pornography group and former Republican state representative, said his group is requesting that the libraries respond. This is a kind of a church-state issue here,
mm-hmm.
Pastor Metter. Do you have an opinion as to what or what should not be in public libraries? And are you worried about censorship?
Well, and this is one of the areas that we struggle with, because we live in the, you know, we live in the tension between the two kingdoms in the world. You know, we have the kingdom of the great of grace, which is the church, which revolves around what God has done for us in Jesus Christ, and we have the kingdom of the left hand, which God has put in place for the service of the kingdom of the right hand. It's to make sure that the people are protected and such like that. as a result, and then we struggle with what role does the Christian play, because we live in this tension. The kingdom of the left hand includes all those who are who do not subscribe to the faith as we do. Me personally, I would rather not have those books being purchased out of my tax dollars as a concerned Christian citizen. And it sounds to me like, having this be the first time I've heard the story, it sounds to me like they're proceeding properly using the channels. I'm not necessarily someone who would endorse burning books and things like that, but I think as the society as a whole has a stake in some of the issues that these books are addressing. I agree. 11-year-olds probably do not need details.
How old are your kids?
12. My boy is 12. My daughter is 9, and my youngest is 5.
And
so,
the youngest is boy or girl?
Boy. Boy, girl, boy.
So you got a 9-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
Are you on point? Are you on alert?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. As she as she begins to slide into that age where she makes the slow yet shockingly sudden transition from little girl to young woman, I'm on point. And there's a lot of things.
And I can tell you're serious.
Oh, I am. I am. You know, it's amazing how the birth of a daughter changes the way a man looks at the world.
Can you elaborate on that?
Oh, absolutely. I can remember. It was July of 2000. I was still serving at Zion Annawa, up near Wausau, Wisconsin, and the big thing in August is to go to the Marathon County Fair. And I can remember, I mean, I'm 30 years old, and I'm pushing the stroller with my newborn daughter in it, and everything's great. And I start walking down the midway, and all of a sudden, teenagers travel in packs. You know, these are 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th grade girls running around with their little cutoff shorts and their string bikini tops. And for the first time in my life, that offended me. Because all of a sudden, I was struck with the fact that someday, someone's going to be looking at my daughter like that. And for the first time in my life, I uttered the words, put some clothes on. it's true.
When you uttered those words, I take it that was under your breath.
To my wife.
Yeah.
And I looked at Jill and I said, put some clothes on. And
what was your wife's response?
She laughed at me. She laughed at me initially. You know, she agreed with me, but she laughed initially because, there's certain times when those things were, when you were 16 years old, that was a gold mine, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
I'd have been right in the pack with them. There's a reason why that right behind the girls in that outfit were a pack of teenage boys. But all of a sudden it changes, and we have this. And this is one of the reasons why it's important that Christians follow the mechanisms. We don't want to go storming into these libraries and tearing them up and things like that, because that's not what, because we have a fourth commandment responsibility to submit to the authorities over us. Okay? And in a taxing body, that library board is part of that. Because the St. Louis County Public Library, gets some tax money from the taxpayers of St. Louis County. So as a result, there is a mechanism in place under Romans 13 where that needs to be followed.
Romans 13 is what?
Romans 13 talking about let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there's no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. And the idea in resisting in there is rebellion or insurrection. So if this Citizens Against Pornography were to this afternoon decide to go to the St. Louis County Public Library, check out all those books, and then destroy them on the front steps, okay?
Yeah.
That's not an acceptable procedure, because that's stealing, that's theft, there is a mechanism in place. You go to the board, you present your case. The case, and we have to present our case in left-hand kingdom language. You know, we can't necessarily go in and say, well, you can't have this because God says thou shalt not commit adultery. The rules of the kingdom of the right don't seamlessly fit into the kingdom of the left. While we may be motivated by that and realizing that we do not wish to have our children reading this, it becomes more important for us as Christians to become informed and go to the library board and say, ladies and gentlemen of the library board, here is why we have an issue with this. The Citizens Against Pornography, we have an issue with this because this desensitizes sexuality for adolescent teens who can't handle it. This is a how-to manual for adolescent teens to become sexually active, which will run the risk of teenage pregnancy, which runs the risk of teenage venereal disease, and all of these other things that the society, that the left-hand kingdom has a stake in. You know,
the culture at large mm-hmm. has a high motivation to sexualize your 9-year-old daughter.
Absolutely.
That's high on the list. And if, as they indoctrinate her in that sexuality, if they can get her to be promiscuous, they consider that to be a home run.
Mm-hmm.
No wonder you're on point.
Yeah.
But they're...
You tried to buy shorts for a little girl lately?
They want to use the libraries to further this agenda.
And that's where, you know, it becomes, you know, it's one of these things where, I can't remember how long ago it was, where Abercrombie and Fitch clothiers were marketing thong underwear for 6-year-old girls, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the people sat back and said, no, this isn't right. And it stopped. They followed the mechanism, you know, and this is where Christians do what Christians do. This is where we live our values in the left-hand kingdom, meaning we don't patronize the merchants who hawk that kind of stuff. We don't, and we use the mechanisms we have at our hand. The bottom line is they really don't. It's not that they want to overly sexualize.
Pastor Metter, you are such a square.
I know. So be it. So be it. You finally figured me out. You know, but here's the deal. You know, we have the responsibility. You know, the children have been entrusted to us. The children are a trust to parents from God. And God has informed us with His Word. And you know, my job as a Christian parent is to turn that child out into the world, formed by God's Word, so that they too can be the next generation of those formed by, so that they can form the generation following them. Okay? And part of that is going to be, you know what, we don't read books like this. You know, and as a society, you know, we can, St. Louis County can say, you know, we really don't need books like this. Realizing that the mechanism is, if it comes to a referendum, it may not pass. So we find other options. There are, you know, and that's one of the unique things, and that is one of the biggest reasons why Christians have to steer between the rock and the hard place, especially this year, with this being a national election year. There are two sinful, destructive points that we must navigate between by the grace of God. One is to over-politicize the gospel, identifying North America, the United States of America, with the Israel of the Old Testament, which just doesn't wash. Okay, we're the new Israel, the shining city on that. No, you can't argue for the United States of America on Old Testament biblical terms. You can't. The error that a lot of fundamentalist evangelical Christians make. Okay. But on the same time, at the same time, we also have to steer clear of the sin of being mind-numbed robots who either follow, who follow along, or totally chuck the process as well, Christians under Romans 13, that very same submitting to authority for us is participation. It's, and participation is not just coloring in the little oval on the first Tuesday in November. It's knowing what goes behind coloring in that oval on that first Tuesday in November or in August when there's a primary or whenever. You know, and it's critical for our people to live as people of the gospel in the left-hand kingdom, informed, but also working under the left-hand kingdom rules.
Carl Hendrickson, the chairman of the local Citizens Against Pornography group that I mentioned before, wants libraries to do these things: establish an adult advisory committee to screen the books before they are placed in the libraries, construct a system by which parents would authorize their children to check out objectionable material, set up a rating system that would alert parents the material can be considered objectionable, and remove the books in question from the teen section and transfer them to an adult section. It says here the library system is fighting back. There will be a library staff meeting later this month to discuss and review the books in question. Library administrators maintain that anybody who wants to challenge the library's collection can submit a materials reconsideration form, and that to remove the books from their current location would constitute censorship. In addition, members of its teen advisory board are aware and displeased with the request to restrict titles from their access. If a book is classified as a teen book by outside sources, there is no point in trying to restrict it from us, said David McRunnell, a 15-year-old from Creve Coeur. We are a library, and we have to serve all the citizens, said Charles Pace, the director of the St. Louis County Library. We don't act in the place of the parent. Whether I personally agree with an item or not is beside the point. It's about having access. Tim Wadham, the library's assistant director of youth and community services, says the groups are continuing to escalate their attacks on the library. I don't think this is going away, Pastor. If you had somebody in your parish who was engaged in this dispute, how would you advise them?
I would advise them to understand that the library board is still the library board is still covered by the Fourth Commandment. They're an authority in place that we need to honor and respect. They've been placed there by God. But we also have the ability, we also have the requirement to keep the Eighth Commandment. You know, we can't be slanderous. We can't be saying things that are false about the library. But we also have the responsibility to work within the left-hand system in which we live to challenge and change. Now, realizing that, you know, we need to do it in a respectful way, in such a way that it doesn't bring shame on the gospel. You know, the classic example, you know, to switch to a much more hot button issue than books, you know, we in the church, especially the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod, are strong pro-life advocates. And we need to be that when one of these nutcases gets a gun and shoots up an abortion clinic, we need to be the first one out there to say this guy needs to be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. Because, you know, you don't answer sin with sin. You know, you don't answer injustice with more injustice. You know, we have a responsibility to live in such a way that the people will look at us and say, you know, by living by the gospel, living the gospel out in our lives, the people look at us and say, you know, maybe we ought to listen to them again. You know, the problem, you know, the big problem is ideological. These people who the people who are running the library, they have as much of an ideological position a possession of the idea of censorship and open access First Amendment things. They look at the First Amendment in the same way that we view the First Commandment. It's a civil religious thing. You know, it's the religion of our society that we shall not do this. And I think, you know, and as long as we're working within the system, you know, to address it, realizing that we are not going to be able to make St. Louis County or Macoupin County, Illinois, or anything a just utopia on earth, but we simply seek to be faithful with the abilities and resources that God gives us, you know, then we're going in the right direction. You know, we don't need to be, you know, we are not going to make this a perfect place. Because there is a perfect place called heaven, and that's where we're heading. we're not meant to dwell here forever. But that being said, we also need to stand up and call sin, sin.
I don't disagree with what you said. I think what you said is clear. However, I think that it might leave some folks frustrated if you do worry about. I think that there is a link to the what seems to be tidal wave of perpetration against our children, particularly our young girls, who are being abused and sexually abused and murdered in some cases in our culture these days at an alarming rate. And I think we can connect that to the availability of some of this material.
And you're absolutely right. But the way to do that is within the system, making a logical societal argument with the library board, saying, and the statistics are out there for this. You know, there are studies out there for this. You know, and I think here is where in order for the library board to become reasonable, the people challenging the library board need to be eminently reasonable as well. Because what happens is if you devolve into demagoguery and name calling, you know, the other side digs in. You know, the idea behind our goal as faithful Christian American citizens living in the system in which, you know, we need to put the things in place. The government shouldn't be getting in the way of the gospel. Okay, they should not be establishing the gospel, nor should they be getting in the way of it. But we need to do that in a winsome way, not in an overly in your face, disrespectful, illegal way. Because what happens then is then they can justify digging their heels in.
Well, you know, in some situations there can be productive dialogue. In other situations, it's just a matter of raw power.
Mm-hmm.
And it won't matter how compelling your argument is, how compelling your logic is, how strong your religious commitment is. Couldn't care less what you think about anything.
Right.
We're not going to adjust to your will in any way. Go away.
Library boards, school boards, county, city councils, county councils are not divine appointments. Then there is a system in place in this wonderful country in which we live, of which I am proud to be an American. Want to go to Alaska and be a moose hunter right now, but that's another story. But there's a system in which we live that we can make the change. If there is an individual in one of these positions that is hard-hearted and will not listen to reason, then there's a mechanism by which they can be replaced.
You would shoot Bullwinkle?
Hey, Rocky, why don't you pull the rabbit out of my head?
You're listening to the Bible Study. Pastor Nathan Metter is with us here. Ask the Pastor Hour, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Do you think it's censorship, folks? Let's hear from you.
Hello, this is Kay Meyer. There's a lot of confusion about Family Shield Ministries. Most believe it's supported by the LCMS. Not true. Others think it's a program of KFUO. Again, not true. Family Shield pays KFUO for airtime. Your financial support is critical if we're to continue airing the program. Read more at www.familyshieldministries.com.
You and I like to think we are important, we're unique, we're memorable, we're the greatest. Please don't be modest. The old expression, people want to be at the front of the bus, in the back of the church, and always the center of attention, has a certain degree of truth.
Pastor Ken Klaus, this week on The Lutheran Hour.
Sundays at 12:30 and 5 p.m.
A woodpecker's tongue refutes evolution. Learn about it next on today's Creation Moments. And now, here's our Creation Moments host,
Ian Taylor.
The beautiful creation in which we live is not only filled with testimonies to the wisdom of God, it is also filled with special designs that deny the possibility of mindless evolution. Consider the woodpecker. Its tongue can stretch from 3 to 5 times its normal length in order to fish bugs out of trees. Of all places, that tongue is rooted in its right nostril. Going backwards, the tongue splits into 2 parts, wraps around its head between its skull and the skin, passes on either side of the neck bones, and then comes up through its lower jaw and exits through the beak. This gives the woodpecker a long enough tongue that will stretch far enough to do an effective job of pest control on bug-infested trees. Now, how could that happen by blind evolutionary chance? Even evolutionists admit that it's silly to suggest that gradually, over thousands of years, the woodpecker's tongue got longer and began to grow under its skin. As one evolutionary scientist said about the woodpecker's tongue, there are certain anatomical features which just cannot be explained by gradual mutations over millions of years. Just between you and me, I have to get God into the act too sometimes. That's a quote. Why wait to call on God as a last resort? Why not begin with our wonderful Creator?
For a printed transcript of today's program, visit our website at creationmoments.com or call us toll-free at 1-800-42-BIBLE. And be sure to join us next time for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
All right, call it our attempt to simplify your life. Maybe it'll work for you, maybe it won't, but here's the deal. We're hoping that you can utilize this phone number to reach anyone at AM 850 KFUO. Yes, one number to remember, and we think it's pretty easy. 888-4-KFUO-AM. If you can remember our call letters, you're halfway there. It's 888-4-KFUO-AM.
It's life-changing excitement on the next Adventure and Odyssey. Feeling left out and left alone, Eugene Meltzner has hit rock bottom. With the closing of Wood's End, his life has ended. Or has it? Facing the greatest decision in life, will Eugene forever wander lost or discover a new path to freedom? Make your decision next time on Adventures in Odyssey.
Saturday mornings at 8:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Any thoughts on our conversation here as it pertains to public libraries and the material that they contain, those materials, those books, perhaps magazines that flirt with the pornography side of center? We'd like to hear from you. Our numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our guest today is Pastor Nathan Metter. He is pastor at Zion Lutheran Church in Staunton. And I have another story to share with you here that I got from the Channel 4 website in New York, WNBC.com. Do you know what a vole is?
It's like a mole, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hey!
Very good. I only learned what a vole was not too long ago. But there, if your yard's getting torn up, it's probably either moles or voles or what's that beast that's in Caddyshack? Gophers?
The gopher. I'm doing a little dance right now, even as we speak.
Here's the headline. Men's fidelity controlled by cheating genetics. Swedish researchers say 40% of men possess a gene linked to infidelity among voles. So you're probably going to have at least one foot in your evolutionary pool there. A new study has found similarities in the genetics of cheating rodents and those belonging to men who cheat on their mates. In the latest tale of mice and men, researchers compared men and voles, a mouse-like varmint. The study found a gene variant, or allele, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce that, A-L-L-E-L-E, present in cheating voles, also was present in 2 of every 5 men. According to the study's conclusions, those men with the cheating allele were more prone to marital dysfunction and more likely to get divorced. Men with two copies of the allele were twice as likely as a man without the allele. The Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, Sweden, studied the genetics of cheating. Researchers there said the cheating allele regulates the activity of a hormone in the brain that can affect a man's attitudes toward infidelity and monogamy. If a man lacks the gene variant, they're more likely to be a devoted mate, researchers said. So I'm thinking, well, there's going to come a time in the not-too-distant future when Pastor Metter will have a guy in his office there who is trying to explain away his infidelity and why he blew up his family and cheated on his wife and hurt his kids because, hey, it was just in his genes. It's just his genetics. So, you know, what could he do? What do you think?
As I growl into the phone. You know, the problem is, Chuck, you and I remember when computers were done by punch cards, right? Remember that when they didn't take up a whole room and they created a wonderful term. If I say GIGO, do you know what I'm talking about? GIGO?
No.
This is a computer programming term. It means garbage in, garbage out.
Oh.
If you start with bad data, you'll end up with a bad result. And the problem is, the problem with this is these researchers are starting from the wrong point. You know, they're starting from the wrong point. They're saying, well, this gene in voles proves that God made me into a philanderer. Okay, even if they bring God into it, and that's the problem. They start with the wrong point. They don't start with the fact that is it possible that a man is born to be a philanderer? Well, in a way, yes. In a spiritual way, yes. Because running around on your wife and blowing up your family because you can't keep your hands off your secretary is part of that ingrained sinful nature that every one of us has. And God didn't make me that way. My first parents made me that way. And I still bear the brunt of it. There is no way that a vole has anything to do with my choices. And here's the other thing. And this is where we go from theology into logic. Okay? Can a human being, a rational human being, come to the conclusion that sleeping with someone not his wife is probably not a good thing to do? We are not animals. We have a sense of right and wrong.
You must not believe in evolution.
No, I don't. As a matter of fact, I believe that God has made me and all creatures, that He has given us our eyes and our ears and all our members, including our genetics, and He's also given us the ability. He's also given us the ability to know right and wrong. He's also given us the ability to know and to test and approve what His good and gracious will is, Romans 12:2. Okay? We see His mercies, and we see Jesus on the cross, and we know that it's our sin that nailed Him there. So then in view of that mercy, we now can test and approve what the will of God is. And it is never the will of God. Never. Underline exclamation point, the will of God for a man to have sexual relations with a woman, not his wife. Okay? It is never acceptable in those situations.
It seems to me, and I guess this is really the point of the question, that for folks a generation ago who believed in the Bible, who believed that God created the world in 6 days, who believed that man was the crown of creation and was not evolved up from animals, that implied a certain responsibility on the part of people.
Yeah.
But more and more, we seem to be finding genes that excuse this or genes that excuse that, and all of that excusing rests squarely on the acceptance of evolution. So it's not my fault that the vole had a gene that didn't get evolved out by the time it got to me. That's not my fault. And, if I work at this long enough, there are a couple of other bad habits and bad activities that I can explain away if I can just do a little bit more gene research.
Oh, sure. See, this is something else we have to understand, too. When we, the Bible tells us that a day is coming when men will no longer put up with sound doctrine, but we will seek teachers who will come around and scratch our itching ears. And that's going to be true within the church, and it's also these people outside of the church. I will be the first one to tell you that when you start talking about genetics, you're better off, about the science of this, you're better off talking to Bob Weiss. Okay? I don't know this stuff. What I do know is what God says. What I do know is what God says is that we're sinners. And the reason that this world is broken and unraveling like a cheap sweater is because of our sinfulness. And we know that what we do, we know that. And the rest of them who deny this, then we'll assemble people around them who will pat them on the back and say, there, it's okay. See, it's not your fault that you're a cheating spouse. It's not your fault that you're a homosexual. It's not your fault that you're a kleptomaniac. It's not on and on down the line, because they're trying to excuse their behavior. That sounds a little bit like Romans chapter 2, and this is the reason why they, and I'm going to read that for you here as soon as I flip the page in the John McComsky imposed English Standard Version.
You have one of those too, huh?
Oh, absolutely.
It's a movement.
Actually, I was given to me by Terry Dittmer from the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod.
Pretty soon
ministry.
We'll be our own cult.
That's exactly right. Let's see. Try this on for a second. For when Gentiles, that is the people who aren't Jews, who do not have the law, by nature do what the law requires, they are a law to themselves, even though they do not have the law. They show that the work of the law is written on their hearts, while their conscience also bears witness, and their conflicting thoughts accuse or even excuse them. See, this is God's law written on their heart. Why are they doing the research to prove that men are unfaithful? Because they have to find a way to justify the sin. If it's not my fault, then it's not my sin. That's their they're seeking someone who will scratch their itching ears in such a way that they will no longer be accused, but they'll be excused. It's okay.
Wouldn't it make more sense to do research on how to cure cancer?
Well,
it just seems to me. I don't know.
But here's the problem: you don't get headlines. You only get headlines when you actually cure cancer. This person can sit here and do 6 months worth of study, release the study, and it ends up on the Drudge Report, and it ends up on cable news shows, and all of a sudden you get your Andy Warhol 15 minutes of fame, and then you get, so when you write your next grant for your next genetic study, it's bigger.
There's money involved.
Of course. This whole thing, whether it's, the article was Swedish, so there's money in Sweden for studying this.
Let's take a telephone call here. Our numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And Herman, you're on the Bible study.
Thank you for taking my call. Appreciate your discussion there. I just had a question for Pastor Metter's comment on Ezekiel. There is a translation out known as the New RSV. Under the National Council of Churches, and they have an opening footnote on the first page of their Ezekiel section that they replace the term Son of Man, in which Ezekiel is addressed by God, which it's Ben Adam in the Hebrew, but they replace it with the term in English, mortal, which is normally predominantly an adjective, but they use it as a noun in minority usage of language. They do this all through the book of Ezekiel. Other translations, King James, NIV, NAS, and others don't handle Ezekiel like this, replacing Son of Man with mortal. Pastor, would you comment on the appropriateness of this, and what would be, it would seem that the more accurate one would be Son of Man.
Well, we know what St. John, what Jesus tells St. John at the end of the Revelation. If you take away from these words, you know, I will take away from you your place in heaven. If you add to these words, I'll add to you the judgment that falls in this book. It is never a good thing for human beings to do something other than what the original text says. Now, that being said, it is clear from the context of the book of Ezekiel that in many of the places where the phrase Son of Man is used, it's not used the same way that Jesus talked about himself as the Son of Man. Okay? I still don't think I would change the, because when, this is the problem with translation. All translations are commentaries. And what this National Council of Churches, new Revised Standard Version is, what they're doing is they're inserting their commentary into the text of Ezekiel, which may or may not be a good thing. Okay? You know, and I think I would be wary of, you know, and this is one of the things too, you need to test the spirits who bring these to you. They, you know, and you need to look at their argument for making the change. Grammatically in the Hebrew, it may well make sense. You know, again, not to sound like I'm passing the buck on this one, Herman, but a guy like Andy Bartelt or Dr. Andrew Steinman would probably better answer that question from the Hebrew grammar than I can here, you know, at the drop of a hat in, you know, on the telephone, on the radio. You know, given time to look at it, maybe we could you know, come up with a sound reason for it or again it, you know, whatever, you know, but I think the thing we need to understand is it's never a good idea to subtract from the plain words of the text. Because that, after all, is one of the, you know, there's a reason why our Lord chose to use words and not just the Shazam method, where the lightning bolt comes out of the skies and wham, you're one of mine. There's a reason why he chose words, and there's a reason why these words on a page mean things. And God uses those meanings to shape our lives and to shape our faith. And when we start sitting in judgment, we run the risk of running afoul of what God intends. I didn't expect to go to Ezekiel today. That's good.
Herman, he's got a good curveball.
He's sharp. I like that.
I know.
I hope I didn't act like I punted too much on that, but I kind of did.
Well, we only ask you to share with us what you have, and
that's right.
All right, let me put this question to you. We have our president and vice presidential candidates. We know who's going to be running and who will be the primary contenders when it comes to November 4th. There hasn't been a whole lot of pro-life, pro-choice discussion, it seems to me. It's there. I'm not saying it's absent, but it hasn't been front and center. Are you expecting, Pastor Metter, for that issue to make its way to the fore in the next couple of months?
I expect it in the next couple of weeks, simply because Governor Palin is such a pronounced pro-life advocate. As she becomes more well-known and becomes more scrutinized by the media, if that's possible, you know, it's going to be clear that one of the fear-mongering of the pro-abortion movement is going to have to say, see, they're going to, you know, she wants to send us back to the back alleys with coat hangers. You know, because that's the typical response. I do anticipate that coming up again, because it's good for votes. You know, it's good for votes. There's a, you know, and again, this is the kingdom of the left hand. Okay, this is the civil realm, and in our little corner of God's creation, in the civil realm, God has established it so that we have to win 50% plus one. You know, to be seated. Into government.
We have seen, and I will use the Nancy Pelosi example, a case where a candidate for office claims a thoroughly Christian identity. in Nancy Pelosi's case, describing herself as an ardent Roman Catholic, but as equally ardent pro-choice, two seemingly incompatible positions. And the question I would put to you is, I believe strongly that there are Christian people who are listening to us now who are quite firm in their Christian identity, but who are pro-choice.
Simul justus et peccator, at the same time saint and sinner.
So you, if I'm pro-choice, you're calling me a sinner?
Yes. Yes, I am. But that's a kingdom of the right-hand thing. And that's a right-hand pronouncement. That's not a left-hand pronouncement. That is a theological, religious, scriptural position.
All right, so do this in the time that remains here. With the election now about 8 weeks away,
mm-hmm.
and the candidates known, and their pro-life, pro-choice positions clear, talk to me, if you were, how do I say this? If you knew that I was, called myself a Christian, called myself a Lutheran Christian,
mm-hmm.
but I am pro-choice,
mm-hmm.
explain to me why I should, how I should straighten that identity out before November 4th.
Well, the idea that, you see, you have to be careful. Because, again, this is a left-hand thing. It is dangerous for Christians to be one issue. Okay? But it becomes important that you realize that you are a Christian on that second, on November 4th, you are a Christian on both sides of the curtain in the voting booth. Your job as a Christian is to test and approve what God's will is. And you do that by prayer and study of the scriptures. I personally have come to a conclusion, and I believe it's a scriptural conclusion, that the death of the unborn is not something that I can support. Okay? Because I cannot, in good conscience, you know, if because of that, I cannot, in good conscience, cast a vote for someone who says that it's okay. All right? The biggest thing at that point that I would do, if you were that individual who were, you know, a member of my own congregation, I've had this discussion with the members of my own congregation, Chuck. You know, they know where I'm at. They know where I'm at. And it becomes incumbent on them to examine the scriptures and prayerfully consider the will of God, not the will of my political party, not the will of my neighbor, you know, not the will of Gloria Steinem or Nayrol, or for want of a better term, not the will of James Lamb. You know, because finally, it ultimately comes down to a conscience issue.
James Lamb is the head of Lutherans for Life.
Right, Lutherans for Life. You know, now, James Lamb's going to have a pretty good argument because he's dealing with the scriptures, okay? But ultimately, finally, it comes down to God's word and your heart. And I believe that there are those who, because we are at the same time saint and sinner, come to the wrong conclusion on that issue. There are left-hand arguments for it as well. There are left-hand arguments for it as well, because guess what? The reason that we have the discussion of mercy killing, you know, euthanasia, the reason that we are beginning to have that, which most people find offensive, is because we abuse life at the beginning. When you abuse life at the beginning, you will abuse life at the end. It is a logical conclusion, and pretty soon, when you start with a logical fallacy and you take it to its extreme, then somewhere along the line, somebody in midlife is going to be determined whether their life is viable or not.
See, Frank has a comment we want to squeeze in here before we run out of time. Frank, you're
sure.
On the Bible study.
A very astute observation, my pastor Metter and yourself, Chuck. I would like to say, add though, that it's not just strictly left-hand kingdom. I think perhaps you alluded to that, where it comes right from God's Word.
Right.
And we as Lutherans refer to it as the use of the law, the third use, to remind people what the will of God is specifically, which is not to murder. And in the public ministry, all ministers need to always remind their congregants of this fact. And I think they, passing the buck, you can do that on the public airways or in your congregations by saying, well, we're both saint and sinner, and boys will be boys. And that's not true. We need to preach the law properly, the way it's proclaimed in the Word of God. That's all my comment. Thank you.
And Frank's absolutely correct. You know, it's one of the things, we have so many preachers who are afraid to preach the law this time of year because they're going to get their 501c3 from the IRS revoked because they advocated a candidate. Or you may be a more ideologically conservative pastor serving in a community that is more ideologically liberal, and you're afraid if you start espousing the sanctity of human life, all of your people are going to stop giving money to the church. And finally, ultimately, we are called to preach the full counsel of God, law and gospel. And Frank is absolutely right there. You know, when I went to one of the things that struck me when I went to Washington to do the opening prayer at the House of Representatives, there were very few limitations on what I could pray. There were very few limitations on what I could pray. And I think that we also need to see that when we're preaching. There are very few limitations on what we can preach. But it's guided and informed and directed by the Word of God. That becomes the final thing where we finally have to say, I must obey man, or God rather than men, in matters, especially in these matters.
Well, maybe a month from now we'll be able to revisit this point, because I too think that the issue is going, it's been sort of on the back burner here. I'm not quite sure why it's been on the back burner, but I guess it's just sort of been waiting for all of these conventions and things to settle down and for us to get into that home stretch toward the election. But I expect it to come fairly quickly, as you pointed out, in weeks, not months.
Well, you know, I really think, and I think if you watched any of the convention coverage of this week, the Republican convention, it has been very direct. Starting with Fred Thompson the other night, you know, it's starting to ramp up, and it will ramp up, and it will be shrill before November. The life issue will be a shrill debate, and that's coming.
Thank you, Pastor.
Thank you,
Pastor Nathan Metter, with us here on our Bible study today and our Ask the Pastor Hour tomorrow. Pastor Warren Worth is scheduled to be in for John chapter 6. Pastor Alan Shade for Ask the Pastor.
Listen to Chuck Rather than guests Monday through Friday at the same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the Internet at kfuo.org. For a free copy of the Bible study, please visit the audio archive section of our homepage. That's kfuo.org. The Bible study is a broadcast service of Worldwide KFUO.